My wife, Kristen, was supposed to be here with me, but the messiness of being parents and having kiddos and all that stuff, we had a sitter who was our next door neighbor, really sweet girl, just came down with mono. Imagine how she got that, you know? So she got mono from her football playing boyfriend, and so we lost our sitter for the night, and we had a school activity and all that, so all that to say, Kristen's home with our kids, and I was really hoping she'd be here, because I think this would be just ideal, since we're talking about dating, it'd be good to have the brains of the family here anyway, and the beauty, but she told me she's praying for us, and for me, and for our time together, so we're going to talk about just a really fun topic that is near and dear to my heart. So as Rachel came to me 4 months ago, 5 months ago, whenever it was, and said, "Hey, we'd love for you to talk about dating and community." That is about the most strategic use of my time that I could think of. And so as I think about what I do in my role, I cannot think of just really how I could spend my time better with talking with people who lead young adult groups and single adult groups about dating and premarital sex, cohabitation, how do you process relationships, how do you give feedback, how do you talk about boundaries, how far is too far? How do you know if this is the right person? I mean, we just brainstormed a million topics, and I've got 25 minutes to cover them all. So really strategic use of time, but I have no idea how we're going to fit it all in. So what I'm hoping to do is just attack some of these topics. You've got a handout. Does anyone not have it? All right, we're going to go through the little skeleton outline I have on there. We're going to talk through why is it difficult to discuss dating within community. We're going to talk about what would be the ideal, what would we like to see happen as you talk about dating within your groups. We're going to talk about what does the Bible say about how far can I go, premarital sex, can we sleep together, can we test drive the car beforehand, all those ridiculous questions we get asked all the time. Is premarital sex okay? How do I know if we should really get married if we haven't had sex before we get married? Can we spend the night? Can I live together with him? We're getting married in a couple months anyway. It's probably okay. No, it's not. Then we're going to touch on marriage, divorce, and remarriage very, very briefly. And then I just want to really challenge you guys, and this is where I want to spend a good chunk of the time, in number 7 on there, the importance of community in dating relationships. And so I want to raise the bar and challenge you guys on what you can and should be doing within your groups. Last, I've just tried to give you some good resources and some materials that will help you beyond tonight. All right? My story with Kristen is that we have been married almost 9 years. And this is a topic that's near and dear to my heart for a couple of reasons. One, because it's my job and because I see this all the time. Second is that my wife and I are the recipients of good community when it came to dating. And so we were just talking about this right before I came up here. We met about 12 years ago. We met in the fall of 1997. And we are both physical therapists. So I went through physical therapy school. And is anyone a PT or an OT? Speech? Who's all right? Speechies? Hi. Speechies are kind of similar people to us. So we do school, and then part of the school program, you have to do these like 8-week or 12-week rotations. And so I show up at Shepherd Center Hospital in Atlanta. I sit down on a mat, and in walks this woman who just blows me away. And it turns out it's Kristen. And she is my teacher for the next 2 months while I'm in this hospital doing this internship. And so, yeah. So it is Van Halen, hot for teacher, all over the place. All right, so I am just totally hot for Kristen from the moment I see her and basically profess my love to her within my first week of my clinical rotation. She keeps... The way I tell it is that she keeps coming on to me, and I'm like, "Kristen, it's not appropriate. I'm your student. You know, it's not right for this to happen." But the reality is that I chased after her for a long time. And we dated. I finally convinced her to date me after about 2 years. And so I wasn't her student anymore. I actually came to work at the hospital where she was. And we started dating, and it was terrible. So at this point, we had just become believers. We'd been believers for about a year and a half. She became a believer, and then kind of coincidentally, I became a believer around the same time, a few months later. And so we started dating 2 years into being new Christians. And Kristen was still everything to me. And so my whole world revolved around my relationship with Kristen. If we were doing well, then I would have a good day. If we weren't doing well, I had a miserable day. And so I would go hide out somewhere and basically cry in the chapel in the hospital. I was so pitiful. I was the wimpiest excuse for a man there was for about 6 months while dating Kristen the first time. The flip side is that she's dating this guy who's not even a believer. And so she's dating me, but then she's kind of dating this other guy too, and so she's dating two of us. She treats me like crap. Okay, so she was really mean to me, and I kept coming back for more and more and more. And so it's her sin for treating me like that and for dating this non-believer, and then my sin for just for enduring abuse for a long time. And so we are both in community groups at the time, and my community group was all over me. You know, you need to leave this girl alone. You need to run, not walk away, run away. But I'm like, she's so hot and she's so sweet and she loves Jesus. And they keep telling me this over and over again. And at the same time, her community group is saying, you've got to go. You've got to leave both of these guys. One, you need to leave the non-believer because he's not a believer. And then you need to leave Scott because he's pathetic. So, true story. So, we end up, the reason we ended up breaking up, we were on and off for about 9 months or so, and we ended up breaking up because of community. I really think that I would have stayed in that relationship if it weren't for community in my life and hers. And so we broke up and ended up having the best 6 months of our lives, not up until that point. So we both got healthy. You know, I threw in with my community group in a new way. I started serving. I started leading the guys. I became a man during those 6 months. And so when we broke up, I was absolutely convinced and hopeful that we would never get back together again. I still really cared for her, and she was one of my best friends, but I had no interest or desire to get back with her. But because of the role community played in my life in getting me healthy, the way community played a role in her life in getting her healthy after we broke up, we just came to a different place in the fall of 2000. And so she actually asked me out in October of 2000, how about that? And we went out on this really cool date, and things were just completely different. And so I was in love with Jesus a lot more than I was in love with Kristen, and Kristen was in love with Jesus a lot more than she was in love with Scott. And so we started dating again, got back together, proposed in February 27th of 2001, and then we got married September 15th, 2001. We got married 4 days after 9/11, which is really crazy. And we are 8.5 years later. We've got 4 boys. We've got twins that are almost 6 years old. One of them loves Brooke. Hi, Brooke. But he thinks, this is a story for another day, but one time he said that Brooke was going to be at his wedding and said, is Brooke just going to be a guest or is she going to have a special role? No, she's going to have a special role. So Duncan loves Brookie. So Duncan and Drew, and then we have a 3-year-old named Carson and a 1-year-old named Lincoln. So really sweet boys, and I wish Kristen was here to just kind of be a part of this with me. That took much longer than I thought it would, but it's fun to talk about that. So anyway, community's played a big role in each of our lives in many different ways. And primarily for us tonight, what's pertinent is this whole area of dating. And so what typically happens when it comes to dating in community groups, I've heard this come out a few different ways. One is that they don't really talk about dating in the Bible, and so therefore we shouldn't talk about it in community groups. Or it's okay, since they don't really talk about it a lot, that means it's okay to do everything except to have sex, and you just don't talk about it. Or it becomes like the only thing you talk about in your groups, or you don't talk about it at all because everyone's jealous that somebody has a good relationship and you don't. And so let's just raise your hand. Hopefully you got to talk through this in the beginning, but what are some reasons why it is difficult to talk about dating in community groups? And I'm very participatory, and I'm also not afraid of silence. So raise your hand, shout out answers, I don't care. Yeah?
In a relationship, if they know it's not appropriate, they're more likely to shut down.
Yeah, great. So somebody's in a relationship, they know that they're going to get challenged, and so I'm just not going to bring it up. Good. Or you've got people in the group that are afraid to confront and challenge, so they don't bring it up even though they know somebody's in an inappropriate relationship. Good. What else?
Everybody has different definitions for the word date.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, even in this room, you know, you say, America, they think, but people are completely different places.
Yeah, it's good. So is it like dating if you go out on one date? Is it dating if you go out with groups? And you should only go out in groups if you're real Christians, right? You shouldn't go out one-on-one. And so.
And you'll also get, you know, some people that like, you know, they're not going to go past a one on the list.
Yeah.
And they're till marriage. And
yeah.
You've got other guys that are like, you know, like, you can't even get past that point, so they're not going to listen to anything else that person says about.
Yeah, that's good. So just dating means different things to different folks. And we're not going to define dating tonight, so if that's on your expectation list, you can take that off there. What else? Yeah. 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 And if you don't like the person I'm with, then you're really attacking me, not just her, or not just him. You're attacking who I am. It's good. What else? Yeah, great. So Kelly said just different schools of thought on how to date, what dating should be like. Great. Yeah.
I guess if you're waiting to date, you don't want to always talk about dating.
Yes. Yeah. What do you mean by that? I'm just kidding. Yeah. 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 Do you want to expand on it? Yeah, 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 yep. Well said. Good, a couple more. Yeah.
Especially the things you're not supposed to be doing a day, when you get told not to do them, you want to do them. You're enjoying them. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
Guy and girl, there's the intimacy, the closeness, and the guys, you know, that's that. You don't want to. You don't want to be called out.
Yeah, great. Yeah, there's just benefits. Benefits that sometimes come along with dating that if you confess them, you're going to get challenged on them, and then you're either, you won't do them anymore, or you're going to do them and you're just going to lie about them. Yeah, it's good. One more. Yeah, judgment, the judgment both, yeah, it's exactly right. We call it the love goggles, you know, that everything just kind of looks better when you're in a relationship and you just don't want to hear what other people think. Because you might ruin my deal if we actually talked about it. It's good. So I've just wrote down a bunch, and Chris and I brainstormed, and I think you hit most of these. But we don't want input from others. We're afraid of what they may tell us. They may end the relationship. We don't want to step on toes or hurt feelings, i.e., we don't like the other person. Their partner may not want you discussing the relationship. It's, I use the word partner. Don't read into that. That's just the best word to discuss this. It means boy, girl. They don't know how to ask or what to ask or that you're allowed to ask or that you should ask. Some people think what happens in their relationship is their business. You know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I love this one. Turnaround is fair play. So what comes around goes around. If you grill me, then chances are really good that I'm going to grill you. And so I don't want to be grilled, so I'm not going to ask you anything. You're insecure when others are doing well and you don't want to hear about it. And then you get your feelings hurt when people in your group spend less time with you and more time with your boyfriend or girlfriend. And so we just kind of make this judgment that if you're in a group and you got a bunch of people in your group and somebody starts dating somebody else and they start spending less and less time with you and more time with their girlfriend or boyfriend, we just start making it the sin issue all of a sudden that you're sinning. You're not spending time with your homeboys anymore. All you're doing is spending time with your girlfriend. And so that's a sin issue, and so we're just going to either avoid that or we're going to make you out to be a sinner because you got a good deal going on, and we're just kind of jealous of it. So instead of rejoicing with others, we just criticize, and we call it sin, and we attack it, and we're insecure about it. And it, you know, so I thought of 1 Thessalonians 5:16-18 came out when I was thinking about that insecurity of, rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. And so instead of celebrating, we just are rejoicing. We're just insecure and we're jealous, and so we don't want to talk about it. So what would be, that's the hard stuff in it. What would be the ideal way to discuss dating? If you could script it out and somebody in your group is dating someone or they're in a serious relationship, what would you like to be able to do in your group? What would be the ideal?
Well,
And that's what we're going to shoot for. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that has to be established. Like, if we're going to talk about dating, I want to know that you're for me, and that allows me just to be really open. Like, I don't have to hide. I can give you the full picture of what's going on if we trust one another. It's great. What else? Yeah. Thank you. Very well said. So, the foundation has to be Scripture, and so. Yeah, here's what I hear. If I had a nickel for every time, how cheap am I? But if I did have a nickel for every time I heard, it's okay for us to sleep together, spend the night together, to do X, Y, and Z because that's what all my coworkers do. I don't give a rip what your coworkers do. Like, the big deal. What does Scripture say about it? You know better than that. So the kind of the way we handle that, the way I'll save this for a few minutes down the road. Just different, maybe different standards of how do we treat this with believers and non-believers. But I really don't care what coworkers do. What does Scripture say? It's great. What else? Yeah, it's great. Yeah, asking questions all the way through. What kinds of questions? Good. Can y'all hear that, or do I need to repeat? Good. Yeah. How are you doing? How are things? We're recording. Good. Yeah. How are you doing? How are things going? How's it going in the struggle? Are you? How are you doing with purity? Are you honoring one another? Great. One or two more. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. What's your name?
Polly.
Holly. Jolly. Thank you, Jolly. No. Holly said. So that's great. In her group. They've established some general criteria. Like, these are three or four things that are non-negotiables. And so, you know, if you're going to date somebody outside of these non-negotiables, this is a non-discussion, right? Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Polly. Holly. One more. Scott.
We set the standard in our group.
That's great. Yeah, that's really good, Scott. So Scott's saying that, you know, as guys, a great way to lead out in the way that you treat her or honor her is that you would have no shame or embarrassment about somebody else dating her in the future. You'd have nothing to apologize for in the way that you treated her physically. You honored her purity-wise. That's a great way to look at it. Good. One more. Yeah. That's great. Thanks, Amanda. So, yeah, just having that baseline of the balance of grace and truth, and so you can expect to hear truth when you mess up, but at the same time, you can expect that it's going to be a place that's full of mercy and grace. That's the kind of group I want to share my struggles with. I don't want to. God, we're so good in this church of kicking the crap out of each other when we mess up, and so most churches are so full of grace. We are recording. I've got to stop using that word, maybe. Yeah, can you bleep that out? Yeah. All right. So, most churches are like, you know, we just want to be nice and we want to be Christianly to one another. And so, anytime my cynicism a little bit comes out, but we're not going to really push you too hard. We just want to make sure that you're loved and that there's grace. You know, it's all about grace. And so, if you mess up, that's okay. We're not, you know, God forgives you. Yes, He does, but. And we're called to more than that, that there's truth as well. And so just finding that balance of not just destroying each other and blowing each other up all the time, but giving grace and also speaking truth, which is really, really, really challenging. So I've been involved in community groups for almost 10 years now, about, you know, on the staff side and then going through them and married groups, single groups, and it's really hard to find that balance of grace and truth. But when you find it, that's what I want. And so you guys as leaders, you have the opportunity to help create that culture more than anyone else does in your group. And so if anything, I think that's one of the best challenges you can have coming out of here is figuring out how do you have that balance of grace and truth when it comes to every topic, but specifically dating. All right, so the next thing on your sheet, just when it comes to relationships, almost next thing on there, that we are very open about everything in this church. Like this CR, authentic, transparent culture. Like, I can come up here right now, I'd feel very comfortable in telling you guys anything about me, any sin, anything I've struggled with. You know, a lot of us in here have probably even been through CR. There's just this great atmosphere that we have in this church, whether you've been through CR or not, of just being very open. You know, we do money-wise in community groups. We talk about anything, right, which is great. Like, that's the kind of group I want to be a part of. But for some reason, when it comes to relationships, that's just one of the things that's not always on the table for all of the reasons that we discussed. And so I would just say that, and we're going to talk about this in a few minutes, but one of the most important roles that you will play is helping people evaluate their relationships, because this is, without question in my mind, the most important decision that anyone will ever make of who you're going to marry. All right? So next part on there, what does the Bible say about dating, premarital sex? We know what culture says. Everyone's doing it. It's okay. There's grace. God forgives us. God is, and then there's the flip side of God is anti-sex. He hates it. It's not good. And we forget, and this is a longer talk, but you know, God is very, very, very pro-sex, right? I mean, he made it. He invented it. He didn't look at Adam and Eve and wonder what Adam was doing to Eve. Like, he knew exactly what was going on, and he made them very specifically with boy parts and girl parts for sex. And so God is very much for it in relationships, within the right relationship and the right timing and the right context. We spent about 2 hours last night in my community group talking about what does God say about sex. Like, what, it was really fun. In my married community group, for the first time, we talked about sex in our group. And so we really came up with a theology of sex. And so sex is good. Sex is from God. It's a gift from Him. It's an opportunity to glorify Him. But it's all, that's all within the right context and the right relationship. And so the question always is, how far can we go in relationships? I think this is in your handout. We gave you a little premarital covenant that's a couple pages down the road in your handout. This is what we give to couples that go through our premarital class. Now, what does the Bible say? What does the Bible say about how far can I go? How would you answer that question? Yeah, who said, did you say that? Somebody said, yeah, College of Purity. Yeah, what does that mean? I don't know where that is on that list. Yeah. Yeah, be pure. No sex is definitely part of that. What else? Right, I guess. You're saying it's not just no sex, it's more than that. Good. I disagree. Just kidding. No. Eric, yeah.
You know, don't start something
that
you can't finish.
Yeah. Wait a second. What do you mean by that? Yeah. Yeah. What's he trying to say? Yeah, that's good. Yeah, so that's stuff, thank you, Austin. There's stuff that's just intended for marriage, and so let's not even start. I talk about, like, let's not even rev the engine, okay? Let's not get things going. So let's not get things aroused that shouldn't be aroused, all right? Because it just starts going down a path that's not going anywhere good. Good, what else? Yeah. Yeah, and the time when it so pleases is within marriage. Good. Yeah, so there is no, unfortunately, I wish there was, like, if I could rewrite the Bible, this would be Scott 1:1, thou shalt not go beyond this point. And that's number one. Number two, thou shalt not spend the night with one another. Number three would be, thou shalt not live together before you get married. And that would be my ideal, like, if I could script it out. But, you know, but it is super clear in there. It's just not super clear to us. Like, God's heart in this is very clear. And that it is that sex is reserved for marriage, and that intimacy, sexual intimacy, is reserved for marriage. And so, what does that mean? So, we give out this covenant, and we ask couples to not go past a six. And so, a six on there is like passionate kissing, I think, is the way that we call it, French kissing, whatever. And you may, this is something that's going to come up in your group. Like, what's okay to do? And really, I would say, go so far until you start getting aroused and you want to keep doing more stuff, which is really, really challenging. I've been there. I can tell you the first part of the relationship I had with Kristen, that unhealthy part, we did not get to a 10, but we were doing all kinds of stuff on there. And it was really funny. We used to have, I won't even go there with the covenant. We'd had some misprints on there in the past. I'll just leave it at that. And people had a lot more fun than we probably should have given them approval or permission to do. So we messed up all over the place the first time we dated, and it was really bad, really bad. And so I've been there. I know the struggle. You guys know. And let me just say this part too, that it is okay to be to have that temptation or desire. It is okay to be attracted to the other person. And so we can't downplay that. We can't ignore it. We can't pretend it doesn't exist. And we also, that's not sin to desire to be with somebody else. But the Bible is clear that it tells us, here's a bunch of verses. Ephesians 5:3, you just write these down. Ephesians 5:3, 1 Corinthians, I'll start over again. Ephesians 5:3, 1 Corinthians 6, verses 9 and 18. And really, you can even just say 6 through 20. That whole section is really strong. 2 Corinthians 12:21, Galatians 5:19, 1 Thessalonians 4:3 through 8, Genesis 2:24, Genesis 1:27 and 28. Look those up on your own time. You can do a little Bible study in your group even if you want. Do I need to repeat any of those? 1 Corinthians 6, 9 and 18, or really 6 through 20, and then 2 Corinthians 12:21. I remember when I first started hearing, when I first heard somebody talk about how far is okay to go, that was the question that I always used to ask. Louis Giglio, you guys know Louis? Louis used to say, that's the wrong question to ask, because that really says, how far can I go away from God and still be within the will of God? And so that's not really the right question. The right question is, how can I really honor God in this relationship? And so that's the best question you ought to be asking one another when it comes to boundaries. Is how far can you go with, not how far can you go, but how can you best honor God? How best can you honor this girl that you're dating, like Scott said a few minutes ago, or women? You know, how best can you honor this guy and respect him? And so pushing him to boundaries is not a wife that respects her husband, or not a female that respects the guy. And so the guy's role is to lead, but the woman's got a very important role in that as well. This is a really challenging one, but you ought to be asking this question. How far are you going? What kind of situation are you in? What are you going to do about it so you don't cross those boundaries again? And the reason this is so important is, many reasons. One, it's a sin to have premarital sex or anything that clouds your judgment. Christine talked about clouding judgment before. And so if you are in a relationship, or somebody in your group is in a relationship, and they are reaping the benefits of premarital sex or, you know, stimulation in some other way, some kind of arousal, you are clouding your judgment of the relationship. And so things look much better in the relationship when you are reaping benefits physically and sexually than if you're not. And so I tell couples all the time, you're going to spend a lot more time talking than having sex. And you may think I'm wrong about that. Ripple's a newlywed. Even a newlywed will agree with that one, Rudolph. And so so you will spend a lot more time talking with one another than having sex. And so you better be able to communicate. That is what you need to do. You need to communicate. You need to conflict. You need to be able to talk about expectations, finances, relationships, what God is teaching you. That is so much more important, and that's going to take, not that sex isn't important, but you're going to spend a lot less time doing that than all the other stuff, all right? Next on there is cohabitation, spending the night. And again, you know, I wish the Bible was very explicit in saying that you shouldn't spend the night before you get married, or you shouldn't live together before you get married. The Bible speaks clearly to it. It's just in a language that we don't have the same. That's not true. It is so ridiculous to even think about living together before you get married that the Bible doesn't even address it in the way that we want it to. And so the picture in Genesis 2 is that Genesis 2:24 says, "For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh." And so what that says is a man is over here in his house, and the woman is over here in her house. The man leaves his father and mother, becomes united to his wife, and the two become one flesh. And so there are two separate households. This is the man's household. This is the male's family household. This is the female's family household. When you get married, you form a new one. Anytime you are living together, you're spending the night together, you are creating a relationship that's not put together by God yet. And so Genesis 2:24 is the best picture of why you don't spend the night and why you don't live together before you get married, because you're creating a relationship that's not intended to be there. John 4, the woman at the well, this is the closest picture we have of what Scripture says about cohabitation. And Jesus specifically says to the woman, the man you are living with now is not your husband. He speaks about the fact that they're living together in a very negative light. 1 Timothy 3:2 says we ought to live above reproach. Matthew 5:13-16, being a city on a hill. We give off appearances and illusions when we live together, that we are living like a married couple when we're not. That's what the Bible says about it. If you look at any study on what they say about cohabitation, the results are unbelievable. That couples that live together before they get married have much higher divorce rates, they have higher abuse rates, financial problems, decreased satisfaction, decreased sexual satisfaction, decreased sexual frequency, increased rates of abuse, spouse abuse, child abuse, you name it, increased fights, increased communication issues, you name it. Couples that live together tend to have much more significant issues than couples that don't live together before you get married. Marriage is hard enough as it is, trust me. And so if you live together before you get married, you are just putting yourself in a situation where you're not setting yourself up for success. And so I would be challenging like crazy the people that are in your groups that are living together, the ones that are spending the night with one another. They're just putting themselves in situations that are not setting themselves up for success. And they're giving off the illusion and the picture that they can do whatever they want. And you will hear, well, we don't sleep together when we spend the night. Big deal. Your neighbor doesn't know that. You're putting yourselves in really difficult situations where you're going to be tempted to sleep with one another, to do things with one another that God doesn't want you to do on this side of the relationship. All right? We could seriously spend the whole night talking about that. And I want to save some time at the end for questions on that. Because that's never come up in your groups, has it? Who raise your hand if that's come up in your group? Yeah, most. Why just this side of the room? Do y'all have certain kinds of groups and this side? No. The guys just don't talk about it? Or they're just hot, holy? Okay, hasn't come up yet. All right. It will, I promise. All right. Good. Next on there, marriage, divorce, remarriage. We do not have time to talk about a theology of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Wes Butler and the elders have done an amazing job of putting together a divorce, remarriage, marriage, divorce, and remarriage statement. That is in your handout. Read that over. Look it over. It is great on scriptures about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. In addition, Wes and Richard McCauley did a series. I should have put this on your resource list, but I did not. It's called What Does the Bible Say About Marriage and Divorce? And so if you have anyone in your group dealing with divorce or they're thinking about remarriage, they ought to listen to this series. It is fantastic. So again, it's called What Does the Bible Say About Marriage and Divorce? Just go to Watermark Radio. You can download them or you can buy the CDs. That is all we're going to say about that for lack of time. Next one on there, the importance of community. So write some verses down here. Proverbs 12:15, 13:10, 16:25, and 19:20. So Proverbs 12:15, 13:10, 16:25, and 19:20. So 16:25 is one of my favorites. There's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end, its way is death. And so we think we're doing things right, but we need people around us to spare us from death. And so first thing under this, the importance of community. One is that we need to be for one another. We need to be for the people in our group. We need to let them know that we care about them and that we're not just trying to blow them up and kill them. And we do it, like I said, we do a really good job of just crushing people and attacking them. And I see it time and time again, where people feel like they are just being told what to do and what the Bible says, which is great, but there's no relationship established at all. And so, you know, we've got to, in some ways, we've got to earn the right to speak into their lives of building trust. And so how do you build trust with the people in your group? This is review, but go ahead and let's just talk about it because it's important. Yeah.
Share some
Yeah, great. Good. Share your own struggles. Yeah, great. What else?
Spend time together.
Yes. Spend time together outside of group. Don't just meet. You know, you meet together as a group one time a week for 2 hours with six other guys. That's not the way to build a relationship. You've got to find time to hang out in between group meetings. Good. What else?
Really listen.
Yeah, listen. What do you mean? So tell me what that looks like. That is the best training for marriage that you could possibly have, is just learning how to listen really well. Not that you're training for marriage in community groups, but that is the best thing in all relationships, is to listen well. Not be thinking about what you're going to say or how you're going to respond, but really listening to them. It's great. Kelly? Yeah, good. Encourage them in whatever way, through email, through a letter, through a phone call, through conversation. Just that you're thinking about them, that you're praying about them. Yeah, that's great. And women do a better job in general than men. I would agree. Yeah. Yeah, thanks. What's that? Yeah, oh, that is so good. Yeah, I don't know if y'all are like that, but married groups, we don't play together nearly enough. And so when I was in my first married group I was in, we used to play basketball together all the time, and it was great. That was the best way for us to build relationships. So hang out, do fun stuff. Don't just do business, you know. Actually spend time with one another and build a relationship. It's good. So 1 Thessalonians 5:14 is a great verse. I ought to have it memorized. I've probably taught it enough that I should, but I don't. So 1 Thessalonians 5:14. And we urge you, brothers, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, and be patient with them all. Who's got a different version of the Bible? I've got ESV. Somebody read 1 Thessalonians 5:14 in another version. Good. I love that. What does it say about the lazy? Warn those who are lazy. Yep. Admonish the idle. Yep. So there's a time when we need to warn those who are lazy, when we need to admonish those who are idle. What's the next one in there? Mine says encourage the faint-hearted. Who's got something? Who's got something other than ESV?
NIV.
It says, yeah. So there's a bottom line is there's a season when we need to admonish people in our group. There's a season where we need to encourage those in our group. There's a season when we need to help those in our group. There's always a season when we need to be patient with everyone. And so I have to remember my humanity and my sin and how long it's taken me to get where I am. And so we need to constantly remind ourselves of the gospel. Remind yourself of how long it has taken you to get where you are. Remind yourself that you are still struggling with some sin. And so instead of just destroying one another, we need to be reminded of the grace that we are recipients of and offer that same grace to others. At the same time, we need to admonish those who are lazy. Warn those who are idle. We need to encourage the timid. Help the weak and be patient with everyone. Good. Great verse to put into practice. So next under community, the role of the family has changed. As I've thought about this over time, the average age when people get married continually increases. And so, you know, back 50 years ago, maybe it was everyone got married when they were 22, 23 years old. Now it's moving into the late 20s for the average age. And so that's average. So for every 22-year-old that gets married, there's a mid-30-year-old that gets married. And so we don't live at home. Some of us still do, but most of us don't live at home with mom and dad. And so mom and dad used to play the role of truly evaluating the person that you're going to marry. You know, they would be the ones that would grill them and spend time with them, and their approval was very important in the relationship. It still is, but the role has changed considerably. And so, I grew up as an adult far away from my parents. I was in Atlanta. My parents were in Pennsylvania. They didn't know Kristen other than 4 or 5, you know, meetings or visits with her over the course of a couple of years. They had to approve her. I wanted their approval, but they were not the ones who had more of the ultimate say in who I was going to marry. And so that role is in community. So you guys play a very significant and important role in helping someone evaluate the relationship. Next is that you are the last line of defense. And so when somebody gets married, if they get married and they are in your group, they're really on your watch. And so we talk about community group leaders are really shepherds, that they are watchmen over the people that they're in charge of. And so if somebody gets married that's in your group, and you just kind of watch them go through the relationship and never spoke into it, and it's a bad relationship, guess what? That is partly your fault. The blood is partly on your hands, as we like to say, because you watched it happen. You watched it go down right before your eyes. And so you play a very significant role. I love the way that Wagner talks about this, is that he says that, you know, I am not the pastor. I am, but we are all pastors, right? If you went to the community group conference in the fall, if you heard Todd say it once, you heard him say it 50 times, that we are all pastors. And so the role of evaluating relationships is not just me. It is all of us. And it's more important that it's you than me. And so if there are, let's just do the math. How many young adult groups are there right now, Jeff? Holy cow. All right, so 200, and they're probably average of, you know, 6 or 7 people in each group, maybe even more. So that means there's at least probably 1,500 young adults in community groups. I know probably 20 of those, okay, out of 1,500. And so for me to be the traditional role of the church, it's the pre-married pastor or the marriage pastor's role to evaluate the relationship. There is no way that I could evaluate 1,500 relationships, or even 100 relationships, even 5 relationships. That role really belongs within the community group. And so you guys are the pastors. You're the ones that ask the questions. You're the ones that do the hard work, the dirty work. You're the ones that dive in there, that help them evaluate. You have a role to play that I cannot play, that anyone else that's just paid staff, because we're pastors, we do not play that role. That is the role of the community group. You have the honor, the privilege, the responsibility to speak into their lives as they make the most important decision in their life, all right? Jobs are important, money's important, apartment, roommates, all that are important, but nothing is more important than this question of who they're going to marry. And so community groups have to be the ones that speak in. We have blind spots. We need people to speak into those in our relationships, all right? As you do that, you need to encourage one another. Humble yourself. Don't be defensive. Like you shared over there about being just very open. And when you speak into one another's relationships, that's not the time to be defensive or argumentative or trying to prove somebody right or wrong. That's a time to be humble, to listen to feedback, to welcome those who care about you to speak into your life, into your relationship. Last on your handout, just to go over some of the documents. Let me see that for a second, Rob, if you don't mind. We put in here, you've got a resource list on the next page. It just has some resources that I'd recommend. Golly, that thing is hot, Mike. Next is the premarital sexual covenant we looked at, divorce remarriage statement, a cohabitation statement we put together. And then last, this is a really great little article, blog post that came out a couple weeks ago. How much do I need to know about my potential spouse's sexual past? I just think that's a really interesting read to look over. And so you have all that as resources and extra handouts. You know, as you go through this, get help. If you don't know the answer, ask your coach. Ask the staff. Don't ask the staff directors. Go through your coach first. Then go to directors. The coaches can go to the directors with questions. You don't have to fight this on your own. The pre-married class is something that I'm over. And this is a class that's designed for couples who are engaged or seriously dating. And so I get this question all the time, when is the right time to take the class? Do not take it on the 3rd or 4th date. That would not be appropriate, all right? That'd just be creepy. And so don't go on the 3rd date, the 4th date. On the flip side, don't wait until it's a month before you get married. I think a couple months down the road, if someone in your group or you guys are in a relationship and you're thinking about marriage, that's the right time to go through. And so what we do in the class is we try to give the right questions, the right tools, the right things to talk through on whether or not you should move forward towards marriage. It's designed for couples who are seriously dating and for couples who are engaged. It's open to believers, non-believers, members, non-members. We run it 4 times a year, winter, spring, summer, fall. We'll probably have about 300 plus couples that will go through the class this year. It is really designed to help equip couples to know whether or not they should move forward. And so we are not ashamed, and we say it without apology, that our role, we feel like, is to help break couples up. And some of you that have been through it, you've heard me say it a bunch of times. We either try to break couples up, we try to help them think this is the time, we just need to hit the pause button and figure out what to do next. Or we help you get to the end of the class and celebrate, and everyone around you is thrilled that you're going to get married. And so I'd say that's one of the best resources that you have available for your couple or for your folks in your group, is to push them towards a pre-married class. When they're going through the class, that doesn't absolve you of the responsibility of evaluating and speaking into the relationship. You ought to be encouraging them and asking them as they go along how they're doing. But the class is a great resource that you guys have. And I'll just tell you, excuse me. I'll tell you that, and I'm really not, because it's not, I didn't put it together. I just picked up what other people started. But we really do. We have probably the best pre-married class in the country. That is from people who evaluate pre-married programs. And so if you're not pushing people through that, then they're really missing out. We just have amazing leaders and speakers and homework that helps these couples evaluate how they're doing. And so push people towards that. Do not tell them to call me, please. I'm not, and I get that all the time. People, I'm dating someone, therefore Kedersha must know how to evaluate my relationship. I don't, okay? So I'm going to always push them right back to you. So don't send them to me. Just, you know, that is the role of your group, and I'm happy to step in alongside. But the role of the community group is to help them evaluate their relationship rightly. All right? We're thinking about calling the class Merge. Do you like that name? Serious question? Yes? No? No? Get out of here. Very impersonal. Oh, man, I feel like my balloon just got, my bubble got burst. Huh, does anyone like it? Thank you. Yeah. But it's merging. You're merging two people together into one. Yeah, so then it's a collision when they merge. Collision. Yeah. Collision's already taken, so we can't use that. All right. Well, I may still use it anyway. Sorry. Thanks for your feedback. The other names we have are like Fuse, Weld, Prelude. I don't like any of those. Yeah, how terrible is that? Yeah, it's terrible. See, doesn't Merge sound better now? Yeah. All right, we got a couple questions. We got 5 minutes for questions. How about that? Questions? Hey, I've spent one. Sorry, before I go, we gave you a couple case studies. I can email the answers to Emily and Jeff, and they can get those to you if you want the answers to those. So, yeah. All right, I will do that since we didn't cover them. Yeah, question. That's a great question. Yeah, the question is, how do you evaluate the relationship if it's long distance? Yeah, that's a great question. So, and it's a really tough one that actually we kind of wrestle through on a very regular basis. So, a few things. One, I would recommend that they still go through the class, that she go through or he go through by himself. And they could still answer the questions, do the homework. And so I would just ask them what they're learning. Can they be honest about it? We'll send the audio. And so that the person that's in your group can go through the class. And then we'll send the audio to the guy so that he can listen and go along with the material. But part of it is you just need to tell them, A, we can't give you a good picture if we don't see you together. So when he comes to town, one, are they staying together? That'd be a good way to evaluate how they're doing. You know, the other thing is I would just really see if you get opportunities to watch them interact, to watch the way they speak to one another, how does he treat her, and I would really speak into that. And whatever limited slice you get, I would take advantage of. And you just have to tell them to be really honest. That's a very difficult thing, and there's some good couple friends of mine are actually working on a book of how do you do long-distance dating. And they've told me that for about 3 years, and they're still at the same place, so that book's never going to come out. But I can always connect them with somebody that has done long-distance dating to help them think through it. That's a really good question. Yep. Keith?
Yeah,
Oh, did you have your hand up? No?
No.
Okay. Here's some of them. Yeah, that's great. So what do you do if, I think we're out of time. Sorry, I can't handle that one. What do you tell someone if they're sleeping together? I love that question. So one first question is, are you a believer? Are they both believers? And so if the answer is no, the way I would answer that is, we're on a different set of standards and rules and on a different level of accountability. And so me as a follower of Christ, the Bible is explicit that we're not supposed to sleep together before we get married. You're under a different set of rules than I am, and so I can't hold you to the same standard, but I'll tell you that there are significant consequences for the decisions you're making now. And so while you're not going to be at the same accountability level, the consequences that you're going to face are really significant. So that's one thing I would say. Two is that I would speak personally from personal experience. And so I am messed up sexually because of things I did in the past. And so I would share very openly about how the struggles I have faced, about how pornography, premarital sex, just all kinds of messed up stuff from my past, how that has jacked with me. And I would the other side is I would share the great, we have a very, very happy marriage and sex life. And so you can still have that, just because this is just kind of a side note. For any of you that have crossed boundaries in the past, you are not ruined, okay? I would just tell you that you can still have a great sex life and a great marriage even though you've crossed boundaries in the past. So back to your question, I would tell them 1 Corinthians 6:18, and this is for a believer or a non-believer, but sexual sin is in a category all by itself. It says that's a sin that's against our own bodies. All other sins are not. And so sexual sin is in a category all by itself because all sin separates us from God, but sexual sin has very significant consequences. And so I'd tell that to a believer and a non-believer. And then for somebody that's a believer, I would give them all those scriptures about sexual immorality. I would give them some books. I'd give them resources. I'd tell them to listen to JP's series in the porch on it, and I would just be all over them. I would push them and challenge them, especially if they're believers, and just keep going after it time and time again. I wouldn't give up. And I would do all the things to build the relationship as well. Love on them, hang out with them, don't cast them out just because they're sinning. Because guess what? We all sin a little bit, right? And so that's not the only thing. And so you still want to build the relationship with them and really address it head on. And it is absolutely the role of the community group to address that. All right. Any questions on that? Would anyone add anything to that? Yeah. I would probably yield to the community guys on how you would. Yeah, so the question was, if it's a lifestyle sin that they continue doing over and over again.
Like living together as opposed to. Like,
yeah. Yeah, so do you keep addressing it all the time, and do they stay in the group? If they decide they're not going to listen to counsel, which is just a great. So if you're not going to listen to my counsel about, or biblical counsel about living together, then what's the point of even being in the group? Like, if we have to address that issue over and over again. How do y'all handle that? That's great. It is a Matthew 18 process. Just habitual, continual sin that the circle keeps needing to be widened. That's great. All right, it is. It's 9:00. We need to call it. I'll hang out, and you can come ask questions. But can I pray for you? That'll be all right. All right. Does anyone object to that? No. All right. God, thank you. Thank you for this time together tonight. And I'm just really grateful to see a room full of men and women who love you and who care about community and who care about folks that are in their groups. Thank you for the young adults and single adult teams on staff that are pouring into these leaders and who care about the way that these groups go. And so I pray for every single one of these leaders in this room that you will help them to have really good conversations about dating and sex and boundaries and cohabitation, all those really difficult issues. And I thank you that I personally am a part of a church that actually acts like the church, where we don't run away from hard conversations, where we are not afraid to encourage, but we're also not afraid to challenge. And so I pray that you'd help each one of us as individuals and as couples and as community groups, to do an awesome job of honoring you and bringing you glory in the way that we address some really significant issues. So thanks again for this time. I pray that you'd help us in our own walks. I pray that we would honor you with our lives. I pray that we would be reminded every day of the grace that we have been recipients of. I pray that you'd help us to reflect that grace out to others in the way that we live. In Christ's name we pray. Amen.